welcome to the Chronic Podcast. I'm your host, Ralph Marlborough. It's Monday. We're joined by Andrew Deutsch to break down the film, as always. But God damn it, Andrew, if it isn't another blue fucking Monday, as the Saints, for the first time in 2012, laid a egg for America last night as they got completely worked. And, you know, you can lay it on the feet. Look, the defense is atrocious. We'll get into that in a second. But Drew Brees, he had like a C-plus game, Andrew, and that could cut it in 2010 or 2009 when the Saints had a running game and a pass rush and compliment. Right now, they don't have a coach, and they don't have a running game, and they don't have a defense. All they have is Drew Brees, and if he's anything other than spectacular, they got no shot.
No doubt about it. Absolutely. And I think the most frustrating thing about last night is the defense, at least some players, got to a point where I felt like they really quit. And it wasn't like they completely quit on every play and you know, there was no effort. And, you know, I don't really want to single out players and stuff. But, I mean, you know, in general, I just think if you look at it and you watch kind of the end of the game once, it was 31-7 and the Broncos got the ball back. There were players that would take plays off. And to me, that's the most disheartening thing as a fan. I think I can always take my medicine when, look, the other team is just better and they run the ball up and down the field and your team is just getting beat. But I noticed a lack of effort on a few plays, and that's probably most disheartening. And, I mean, LSU, I'm a fan of LSU, but one thing that I feel like is incredibly frustrating about that team is how poorly they manage the game and how poorly coached I feel like they are in critical stages of games.
You don't like the Les Miles experience? You don't like the Les Miles experience?
No, burning timeouts in the first quarter? You know,
I'm
very much into the cerebral part of football, and so for me that's a frustrating experience to watch. But anyway, so I've always prided myself on being a Saints fan because I feel like the Sean Payton teams have always been the exact opposite. But if you look at a couple items, you know, the timeout before fourth down, the no timeout with 30 seconds left in the half, right before Denver hit a field goal. I mean, 30 seconds is enough time for Brees to get your team in field goal range and maybe kick a long field goal, you know? And so,
especially in Denver.
And then fourth and two, you know, you late in the game, you're down by a ton, and you need to make that ground up. I mean, I realize you're deep in your own territory, but at some point you got to trust your offense, and they punt. And so I just really felt like for Jovic's first game back, he was – I don't know if he was out of practice or had forgotten the rules of football, but – I just thought the decisions there were pretty poor, not very sharp. And
he admitted it though.
I mean, I think his excuse was, you know, he's been out of practice, but my thing is this is football 101, you know, I mean, any educated fan, and I certainly feel like I'm one, could go into that situation and I feel like be able to make the right call. Those are basic things.
Well, and I think, you know, I'll give Joe Vig credit in that he owned up to mistakes. A lot of coaches like Andy Reid or whatever will just be like, blah, 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 you know, or Bill Belichick. They'll just mumble, mumble, mumble. At least Joe Vig owned up to it. But look, Sean Payton, he's a great fucking coach. And you know, I'll knock Sean Payton for a lot of things. He doesn't really, at times, not even – care about defense, it seems, and he may pass the ball too much. But honestly, Andrew, in the 6 years he's been the Saints coach, I can't remember a glaring screw up with the clock ever. At the end of a half or the end of a game, I can't remember where after a game we were like, I can't believe the Saints butchered that situation of clock management. They never have done it. Because Sean Payton is one of those people, one of those coaches that knows how to manage the clock in obvious situations. And you say it's obvious, but I can reel off Andy Reid, Herman Edwards. I'm trying to think.
Definitely Les Miles.
Les Miles, Jesus Christ. Norv Turner. I mean, you can name a half dozen coaches that the clock is like a foreign language to them. And I think it's just one of the things. You don't have Sean Payton in your clock management. Is instead of being, you know, almost perfect, is like a B- now.
Well, the coaching carousel comes to bite the Saints again because, you know, I mean, you could certainly make the argument that, you know, finally the Saints had a couple wins and things were starting to go better with Kromer. And you know, all of a sudden he's back to his original role and Vic takes over again. So, you know, the minute the team gets in a rhythm with the coach, a new one's sprung on them. And so, but look, here's the thing, Ralph. At the end of the day, the Saints played a playoff caliber team. I really believe that. I think the Broncos run the ball pretty well. They are an excellent passing team. You know, I think Manning was maybe a little rusty at the beginning of the year, but he's found a stride, and he may not be as good as he used to be, but he's certainly very solid. And defensively, I think they were, I mean, with Doomerville and
Von Miller.
Blanking on the other guy's name. Yeah, Von Miller. Those two guys are as good as two pass rushers as you're going to see in the league. And you really saw that the Saints giving as much help to the edge as they could. You really paid attention to those guys. So great pass rush. They can cover. Champ Bailey's still good. And they stopped the run. So, I mean, you combine all those things, and the Broncos are pretty solid in all phases. And that's the mark of a playoff team. So you saw the Saints go into a stadium and probably play the best team they've played so far this season. And I don't think it's the Packers. I mean, you know, the Packers weren't playing that well when the Saints went into town in Green Bay. So this is the best team they've played.
Well,
and found, and that was the result.
And also, too, let's look. You know, I thought they would. I thought with the Joe Vitt return, and I just thought the Saints had momentum. I thought one of these weeks the defense isn't going to be atrocious. And they'll look really good. I thought it would be at Denver. It wasn't. But look, if Green Bay,
thought it was a shot in the arm, it turned out to be a shot in the chest.
You know, but look, if they would have gone to Green Bay and Drew Brees wouldn't have had Drew Brees had an A plus game, and the Saints caught every break in that Green Bay game and still couldn't win. If Drew Brees would have played like he played last night, Green Bay would have hammered the Saints. I mean, Drew Brees. I mean, he was just off, and the receivers were dropping the ball. About the offense, I give Denver some credit, but I thought the Saints protected well. I thought the receivers struggled. And, Andrew, you brought this up before the podcast. This is not something that I noticed. We give Andrew full credit because he's our film guru. But you brought it up, and it's an excellent point. You know, one of Sean Payton's favorite things was the old – and it was a joke almost – was the tackle eligible. You know, Zach Streif, before he started for the Saints, that's what he did. He'd come in and they'd, you know, some teams call it the jumbo package, whatever. They'd bring in the tackle eligible, go heavy on short yardage, and sometimes they'd throw out of it. Have they done it at all this year, Andrew? I mean.
No, they really, and you know, you look at last year, it was Charlie Brown for a while getting the second tight end, the jumbo tight end. And then it was Pat McQuiston after him. So those guys were, you know, doing it last year, you know, since Streif's the starter, but. No, they haven't done that this year, and I don't know if it's a function of Carmichael, who's just not – that's just not his play. That's not – I don't know if he's thrown it out of the playbook completely or if he's just said, you know what, we're going to use it sparingly. But, look, there's no – I mean, the running game is struggling, and when you think about the X's and O's, I mean, it's pretty obvious. It's a lot of size off of the edge, and certainly those guys are going to be more effective and more – powerful off the edge than a tight end. Certainly Jimmy Graham and even, you know, Daniel Graham or David Thomas. So, you know, the Saints have decided not to do that, and they're not running the ball well. So at some point, you know, you got to wonder, well, where is that? Because they've used it in the past and it's been successful. And that kind of goes back to what you were saying about Sean Payton. You know, he's kind of a master of designing weird stuff that people don't think about, thinking outside the box. And, you know, Carmichael's been around the system long enough that he knows all about that, and that's a wrinkle that he's familiar with. And, you know, it's kind of disappointing to see that they haven't used it at all, considering how poor the run game's been.
Yeah, I mean, in this offense last night, they struggled. And I think, you know, I think maybe Denver has shown the blueprint of they're going to say to, you know, other teams are going to look at that and say, hey, you know what, Saints, we don't think you can run the ball. We're only going to rush four. We're going to drop seven in coverage, maybe eight. And we're going to dare you to run the ball. And until you show us you can, we're going to play coverage.
And they got a little bit of running. I mean, Pierre Thomas had some decent stats and some decent runs. But he was really the only threat on the ground. And And just too quick to, I mean, the thing I think that was most frustrating is the second and two from the 50 and three straight plays the Saints throw. So two of those three plays were out of the shotgun, one of which didn't even have a back. So they weren't even pretending like they might run the football.
Yeah.
Second and two, third and two, or fourth and two. And again, I think Carmichael is just, I just feel like Sean Payton maybe is not making those plays. Or at least not making those play calls. I mean, second and two or third and two is a perfect example of where you would see Pat McQuiston be reported eligible and come in as a tight end.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the thing. I don't even care if you throw deep out of that formation on third and two or second and two.
Exactly.
It's the threat. It's the semblance of run.
The cloud
of doubt that you put in your opponent's mind, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if they want to say it's second and two, hey, we're going to bring in an extra tackle, and we're going to put Ingram in there, and we're going to run like a two-man route with Devery Henderson deep and like Lance Moore in his little out cut or something, and we're going to try to hit the bomb on that, and you want to run that on second down, that's fine. But when you're in an empty backfield, you know, on second and two, I just feel like, you know, it's not very, you know, teams, like you say, they know what's coming. Jimmy Graham.
Well, I mean, the Saints still should have converted that. I mean,
exactly.
It came down to Lance Moore dropping that, you know, their favorite play, the extra point play, and he drops that pass.
Yeah.
And that was kind of how it felt all night. You know, a holding call takes back a good run, a holding call by Jari Evans, and then, you know, Jimmy Graham drops a ton of passes, Lance Moore drops the Devery drops the bomb. So there was a number of plays where, you know, the throws, and you talk about Drew Brees, yes, he didn't play well. He had that C-minus game. But there were chances for this offense to get going.
Yeah.
And he put the ball in a place where they could have moved the chains. And those are critical things. Who knows what happens after that play if they just move the chain, if Devery catches that pass. Who knows what happens
exactly
after that?
So you gotta,
those are drive killers. And that's kind of how it felt the whole game. Is the plays were there. They just weren't making them.
Yeah, and I mean, that comes in the sense where, you know, you say, well, the teams are flat or they're not ready to play. I didn't feel that. I just feel like in football, just like any sport, you got to build momentum. You got to have one good play and then a second and then a third, and that's probably part of why the defense looks so atrocious, because they never string anything together. We're going to get to them in a second. I want to touch on one more thing in the offense. Jimmy Graham is really, really struggling. And it's becoming apparent. You mentioned it in your column, but Andrew, he's not, I mean, injuries, whatever, but even before that, he's dropping a lot of balls. He's not nearly what he was last year.
You know, I just feel like right now the Saints offense is performing worse with him in the game. You know, and I feel like the two games that he was out, if anything, they played their best. And, you know, I think Breeze, with good reason, looks his way a lot. And I think when he's out, other guys have stepped up and performed well. Well, the problem is Graham, I don't know if it's lack of concentration or lack of focus or if he's bothered by the ankle and that's distracting him. But really, even before that ankle injury, he's had problems all season with catching the football. And it's really hurt the Saints, because Breeze goes to him on third down more than anything. But it's not just dropping footballs. I feel like he's running lazy routes. I feel like sometimes it barely looks like he's trying. A lot of times with catches, he'll try for the high degree of difficulty, you know, kind of reaching just one arm out instead of, you know, using proper technique and reaching out with two hands and securing the ball in all the way in by keeping his eyes on the football. I mean, just little things. I just don't feel like he's really – I don't know if he just feels like he's made it and he's a superstar now and he doesn't feel like he has to earn it anymore. But no, I think this whole season, I mean, if you look at him statistically, and I'm sure people that own him as a fantasy tight end, he's done fine, but, any fan that's really watched him play has noticed that he's really been bad all year. And, but I will give him credit at least, and I like to see this. He scores a touchdown late in the game, a meaningless touchdown, flips the ball to the ref, doesn't celebrate, doesn't do his usual dunk, and goes back to the sideline quickly. Camera goes on him, and he looks depressed. And he looks like he is really disappointed in himself. And you know what? I can at least appreciate that as a fan. I mean, he looks like a guy who cares. And, you know, the last thing I would have wanted to see in that situation was him dunk the ball in the goalpost and act like he usually does because, frankly, he's been so bad that he doesn't deserve that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and, you know, it's a lot of times, you know, teams, you know, in the off season, they look at your film, and I think teams have looked at it and they said, you know what, Jimmy Graham, not that he had it easy last year, he earned everything, but I think that's the one area where the team said, you know what, we can't have Jimmy Graham gashing us and gutting us like a fish in the middle of the field anymore. The Saints might have to do something else, but they're not doing that anymore. And I think teams have taken it away, and I think the Saints haven't adjusted to it, Andrew. And, you know, it's like Bill Parcells, you – in football, you don't stay the same. You either get better or you get worse. And the Saints, you know, in that aspect of their offense isn't as good. But right now, I want to get to the defense, and I want to start with this.
you got 3 hours?
I got 3 hours. I got 20 minutes. And we got the Saints. I think I'm really starting to worry about this front office, Andrew, because, look, Hawthorne's injured, so you can give him a pass, okay? You know, and Chamberlain got injured, so you can give them a pass on that. But last year, they whiffed on Sean Rogers. They whiffed on a Brave Franklin. Bodrick Brunkley was inactive last night. He was a healthy scratch for an Akeem Nicks played. Now, they paid him $8 million. I think they gave him a 5-year, $25 million contract. So what does it say about their personnel moves? And was this a one-time thing in Denver, or is this going to be a trend going forward where Bunkley's not going to play?
Well, I think those two guys were made inactive, and the official reason for it was that the Broncos run almost exclusively out of the nickel, which is true. They're very much in the zone blocking, very much in the cutback lanes. And so what you see is, three receiver sets and a lone running back with no fullback. So that's the majority of what they run. So the personnel the Saints decided they wanted, since they were going to start three corners, was linebackers that would cover, and that's why you saw Herring in the game more, and that's why Shanley was a scratch, because he's not as good in coverage as Herring. And you saw Akeem Nicks, Tom Johnson, and Cedric Ellis, the defensive tackle. And in fact, Cedric Ellis didn't play as much as he normally does either. So, really, Tom Johnson and Akeem Nicks got a ton of run. And then besides those two, the defensive ends played defensive tackle a lot. So I think it was just a personnel thing to try to get in a situation where, A, they could get a better pass rush, and, B, they could cover maybe a little bit better with Will Herring being in there instead of Scott Shanley. So that was the move. That was the explanation. My opinion, I just feel like regardless of the matchups, when you've got an $8 million player, he's your best player. I realize he's a run stuffer, that's his specialty. But it would still be nice to have him active for goal line plays.
Yeah.
The Saints did give up a touchdown in the goal line. Would have been really nice to have Roderick Bunkley in that situation. And look, Cadet and Ivory were both active. Neither of them played a lick. So you tell me, who would you rather have? Chris Ivory, who didn't play the game on a first and goal from the two, when Willis McGahee goes in easily for a touchdown? Or would you rather have had Bunkley active, who at least could have been useful in that situation? And so I think the bottom line is, when you think of it that way, regardless of whether he should have started or not started or played sparingly, the fact that he was inactive, based A, on what you're paying him, based two, on the fact that he's supposedly your best run defender, is inexcusable. It really is.
Yeah, I didn't understand the five running backs active. I didn't understand what the hell they were doing at all. Akeem Hicks has had his moments. Overall, how did he look?
He looked okay. You know, he, you know, I think, the Saints got gashed a lot on running plays, but, a lot of that was the zone blocking and cutback lanes. And, you know, anytime the play is going one way and then it cuts back, I think, you know, that's the Saints did a bad job of recognizing that and mm-hmm. staying in their lanes. But more than that, I think the main problem was, again, the personnel. I mean, the Saints really went into that game daring the Broncos to run the football, which they did, to their credit. They really did commit to the run, and McGahee and his backups did an effective job of kind of running up and down the field on the defense. But that was the game plan for the Saints was, hey, you beat us for you know, huge runs if you want, but we're not going to let you pass on us. And guess what? They still did. So, you know, and that's what I was afraid of. And we kind of said before the game that the Broncos could almost play any play and that I was confident it would be successful. And I could have been the offensive coordinator in that game and picked any play and it would have worked. So, you know, look, I think Akeem Hicks did pretty well. That fumble was huge. It was huge. And it's too bad the Saints couldn't really use that to help them get back in the game. But and yeah, I think he was active. He got in the backfield sometimes. You know, he kind of reminded me of Jonathan Casillas' rookie season. And if you remember Casillas, his rookie year, you know, obviously he's kind of hot garbage now, but he made a lot of plays in his first or second year. I can't remember if it's his first
second
or second year,
I think.
He was excited. He was exciting, and we all liked him. But I think the one negative was he kind of bit on play fakes a little bit, and he over-pursued sometimes. And that's what I'm seeing with Hicks right now is he sometimes he's over-pursuing. And we saw that in the zone running where a lot of times he would bite on the first read and then kind of as the play would cut against the grain, he would be in a sticky spot and not be able to make a play. But you know, as far as straight up beating his man, he did it more times than not. And, you know, he got penetration. And so I definitely thought, along with Lofton, he was probably one of the two best Saints on the field last night defensively. Not saying much, but I do think it's encouraging in that, you know, obviously this defense is going to need a massive overhaul to the extent that they can do it, given the cap. But I think he's hopefully a keeper. I think I saw some promise.
His athletic ability, to me, on the defensive line, jumps out. He jumps off the screen at you, and the Saints haven't had a player like that since Will Smith was in his prime, where it would be a third down, and you could see Will Smith making his move and getting the pressure. I saw that at times with Hicks on the inside, which is a positive, and they're 2-5 now, Andrew. He's got to play. He's got
– Yeah.
He's got
the one. The one other cool thing I saw the Saints do was they put Martez Wilson standing up, so you know he wasn't in a 3-point stance, at defensive tackle. So he lined up at defensive tackle, and you know kind of in the linebacker blitzing stance, and beat his man badly with a quick inside out move, and that was a huge play to Demaryius Thomas that Manning was able to throw, but. As he threw that, he got absolutely drilled and killed by Martez Wilson. And then I think that was the play actually that he hurt his thumb.
Yeah, it was.
But that was the first time I kind of saw a creative blitz from Spagnuolo. And I was like, oh, I really like that play, and it worked. And right before, I was thinking to myself, what is Martez Wilson doing at defensive tackle? And it worked. So that was great. But then, of course, that's kind of the whole microcosm of the season. They come up with something creative, they get a hit on the quarterback, the plan works, and they still get beat over the top for huge yardage.
Well, look, this defense, you know, everybody says fires. But look, if the Saints get rid of Spagnuolo, that's going to be – and they get a new defensive coordinator next year, that's going to be four coordinators in 8 years. That's like Elizabeth Taylor's – you're getting in it like – you're like three-time divorce guy there. I mean, eventually you got to say, like, the problem is you and not the other person. But this defense, if the Saints – look, and I'm all for it at this point, taking a meat cleaver to it and saying Will Smith, goodbye. Roman Harper, goodbye. Vilma, thanks for the memories, goodbye. Malcolm Jenkins, thanks for the memories, goodbye. If they take a meat cleaver to it, Andrew, how does it affect the cap?
Well, I think the cap situation is really bad right now, so that's going to probably have to happen regardless. By my estimation, they were about 15 to 20 million over the cap starting the offseason, and that's before signing any free agents, that's before drafting any rookies.
And that includes like Cedric Ellis coming off the book?
Coming off the book. So, you know, I'm sure Mickey Loomis is a genius at kind of recrafting contracts to alleviate that stuff. And so I'm sure he'll be able to keep a lot of players. But, you know, I think they're at a crossroads now where they're going to have to make this decision. Do we rework all these contracts and stay committed to the core of guys that we have? Or do we commit to Spags? You know, are we committed to Spags? Is he our defensive coordinator? And if so, then we've got to get him the personnel that's actually going to work for his scheme. And if that's the case, then they've got to blow it up, you know, and that would be unfortunate. You know, that's a tough position to be in, because then all of a sudden you're like, okay, do we have time to absorb a couple years of a defense kind of taking their lumps and having their growing pains and maturing back into a unit that can actually be successful?
Well, I mean, though, but couldn't you argue that, you know, this is a good example. The Rams won the Super Bowl in 99. The Saints won the West in 2000. And the Rams defense, look, it wasn't as bad as the Saints defense. It wasn't historically bad as the worst defense in the history of the NFL like the Saints are this year. But it was the worst in football. And the Rams blew it up. Brought in Lovie Smith, made a bunch of moves, didn't bring in a bunch of high-priced guys except for Aeneas Williams, and they went 14-2 and got to the Super Bowl. I mean, if the Saints blow up this defense and can go from the worst in history to number 21, they can be 12-4.
Yeah.
So,
no, you're right. I agree with that.
You know, so, I mean, and look, they're not tearing down the Taj Mahal. I mean, I can make an argument that you keep Lofton, you keep Hicks. I'll keep the corners because I'm not sure about them because the pass rush in the front seven is so dreadful. So I'll keep Greer and I'll keep Robinson, although he's terrible, and I'll keep Johnny Patrick and I'll keep Corey White because they're young. And I'm keeping Lofton,
yeah,
I'm keeping Hicks, but everybody else can go.
The thing I think that makes it tricky for the Saints is the cap situation means they can't really spend. Now, presumably, they'll have a pretty good draft pick. And, you know, that's the hope, is that, you know, they can hit this time with a first-round pick with a defensive player. But, again, Sean Payton era, you look at those first-round picks.
Aren't they due, though, to hit eventually on a first-round pick? Aren't they due eventually to hit?
Man, I sure hope so. I mean, at some point, you know, you have to start wondering, is it, you know, I feel like Greg Williams did a better job of maximizing Roman Harper's talent than Malcolm Jenkins' talent than Spags has done so far. So,
yeah, and they committed to Roman Harper. I mean, they paid him $7 million a year. I mean, granted, if they would get rid of him, it'd be halfway through the contract, so it probably wouldn't be like a tremendous huge penalty for cap hit. I'm not sure what it would be, but it wouldn't be gargantuan. But you know, Andrew, the one thing, though, I will say is if they can – you can – the NFL nowadays, with the way the colleges are, it used to be you draft a defensive end and it takes time. Now you can get a defensive end early and they can be an impact right away. I mean, you look at Jason Pierre-Paul. He's a stud now, but he was an impact guy right off, and he got picked in the middle.
Oh, yeah, J.J. Watt is a star already. I think he leads the league in sacks, and Von Miller – another guy that was good immediately, Chris Long with the Rams. I mean, those guys came in rookie year and dominated.
Well, I mean, and you know, as bad as the defense is, look, say they pick, you know, the Saints pick in the top five, and they, you know, it would Detroit. The raging draft debate, I think, is going to be Barkevious Mingo or Sam Montgomery for LSU because they're local and that's who everybody's going to want. But say the Saints pick Mingo and they hit on him, and he's a 9 to 11 sack guy. To me, changes everything for Spags' defense, because then
the main point here is we're not looking to change from the worst in history to the third best. With this offense, you know, going from worst ever to 22nd is good enough. Good enough for 10 wins, you know, that gets us into the playoffs.
Yeah. So, you know, this defense, it's not getting any better. It's not going to get any better. Do you see, if you're the general manager, what do you try to do besides, I think we both agree, in the top of the draft, you try to get a pass rusher. What do you try to do in the offseason if you're Mickey Loomis and you finesse your cap and you've got to where you can go and get like a Bunkley type where, yeah, they paid him a lot of money for us, but for NFL salary, they're paying him $5 million. That's kind of a middle-of-the-road kind of guy. If you can only get one of those guys in the offseason, Andrew, and you got to do it through the draft, and you can only get one guy impact on defense, where are you going if you're the Saints?
I think it's crucial right now for the Saints that they get, obviously, the pass rusher in the draft, and through free agency, they have got to get a competent cover guy, because in this day and age in football, it's all about how deep you are at corner with cover guys, because the 3 and 4 receiver sets are way more prominent in this day and age in this NFL than the traditional pro style.
Yeah.
So based on that, you know, you look at the Saints corners right now, Patrick Robinson has been horrendous this entire year. He's been getting torched. Jabari Greer has been injured, and he's a shell of his former self right now, and he had a miserable game this Sunday. And Corey White has been a disaster at nickel. You and I have been clamoring all season, where is Johnny Patrick? When are they going to put him in there? Well, finally we got our wish, and I think now we understand why he's playing, because he wasn't any better. So the point I'm getting at here is, and I'm not even saying get rid of all these guys, but you pick up a corner. You know, maybe Jabari gets healthier and he's better next year. You pick up a corner that can come in and start, and all of a sudden Patrick Robinson goes from starter to nickel, and Corey White drops from nickel to dime. And so, you know what, if we can, you know, and we talked about losing Tracy Porter, if you can drop all these guys down in the order and have one guy, and we're not talking about the second coming of Deion Sanders here. I think just a solid role player that can come in and start and just do a good job and do better than what Patrick Robinson is giving the Saints right now would be good enough.
Yeah, and they need a safety too. And you can get a guy at safety. They got a Darren Sharper before, and you know, I mean, look, that might be a once in a lifetime lottery ticket. But if you can get a guy, you can get a guy in veteran free agency for a safety for a song.
Yeah,
you can always do it. You can get a veteran guy, or if they really want to get crazy, they can take a old corner and move him to safety if they want to roll the dice that way. But to me, the Roman Harper Malcolm Jenkins experiment is done. It doesn't work, and I'm tired of watching.
Yeah, I mean, I would even be up for having Malcolm Jenkins move back to corner. And now I don't think he's a starter, but I think, you know, if he's a nickel corner, put him in the slot, he can cover a little bit, and you know, get you know, if he's around the line of scrimmage, he can make some plays. I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't be against moving him back, and then that opens up a spot at free safety for a new player, and you get rid of Roman Harper. You know, but you know, again, I'll leave that up to the Saints. You know, the personnel. I mean, they're going to have to make some tough decisions, and they can't keep. When you have the worst defense in NFL history, I think the policy's got to be we've got to do away with at least half of the starters.
Yeah,
so,
and I will.
You know, you think about it this way, it's like I think at least 5 or 6 starters on this current unit have to go.
Yeah, they got. I mean, it's look, it's the worst defense in NFL history. They got to blow it up, and I think they will. And I think Mickey Loomis will do the contract. They'll have a little bit of breathing room, and they can. You can find guys at minimum salary, and you can plug some holes, and they can get it to where they're not the worst in history in 2013. Before we get to the Eagles game and touch on LSU-Alabama, because I want to get to both of those, I think a key thing for the Saints, and I don't know if it's going to work, you know, But I think, you know, if Tagliabue comes along and reduces the suspensions of Will Smith and Fujita, I know Benson says, hey, then I'm going to go to the commissioner and I'm going to say, hey, I want you to reevaluate Sean Payton. To me, Andrew, this might sound crazy to Saints fans, but if I'm Benson, my number one concern isn't Sean Payton for this year. My number one concern is if Tagliabue reduces the suspensions for the players, I go to Goodell and Tagliabue and I say, look, I want that second round pick back because I'm likely picking in the top five. That's going to be that means it's a top 40 selection. So I go to Goodell and I say, look, I want that second round pick back. Take a fifth round pick, take a fourth round pick, whatever. But I want that second round pick back because Andrew, if they pick in the top five, that means it would be pick number 37.
37, yeah.
That's huge. That's a starter on the defense, okay?
Potentially, yeah.
So I think that's a huge thing. If it goes their way with Tagliabue a little bit, they need to try to get that pick back.
I'm with you, absolutely. And they left the door open for that.
Yeah.
You know, when he Goodell heard the appeal, he said that, you know, the everything stood, but that he would consider reducing, if there was cooperation, reducing the penalty of the second round pick. Now, based on all the court filings and the defamation suits, I realize that wasn't the organization, but I wonder how cooperative the Saints have been. I know that Vitt and Loomis and Sean Payton for the most part have been cooperative in their suspension. So hopefully it will get reduced. But you're absolutely right. I mean, they have got, especially with the way this year has gone, they desperately need young talent. And the only way they're not going to help their team with free agency because they can't pay anyone. So that makes the draft that much more important to bolster their team.
Well, I will say this one thing. Roger Goodell has to come to New Orleans for a week for the Super Bowl. And if he wants to be treated a little better, it would do him some good maybe the week before to announce that he's given the second round pick back. He might be able to get seated at a nice restaurant. so that could help him, I'm just saying. The Saints play the Eagles this week. The Eagles are a fucking disaster on par with the Saints. And they don't even have the excuse of all the bounty stuff. Andy Reid is talking about benching Vic. Please do, Andy. I would much rather have a rookie quarterback than see Vic light up the Saints. I think at least with a rookie quarterback, Andrew, he's bound to make some mistake throws and Spags could maybe trick him. You know? What's your thoughts on how the Eagles game's going to go?
I just, you know, and I retweeted something that I think you saw the other day. Maybe you retweeted it, but it was, you know, I want to apologize in advance for the narrative of Michael Vick is back. That's going to be next Monday night on national TV. And I'm not sure who originally tweeted that, but kudos to you. That was hilarious. somewhere deep in my conscience that I don't like to talk about, I'm terribly afraid of this actually happening. And I can see it now. I can see Tony Dungy foaming out the mouth saying, well, I told you, you should have never benched him. Michael Vick's one of the greatest quarterbacks in the NFL. Just because he rolls up the worst defense in NFL history for 250, a few touchdowns, and 78 yards rushing, you know?
Well, and I'll say
I just know it's going to happen.
Well, I'll say this about the Monday night game. That game is not going to be close. That game is going one of two ways. Either Michael Vick is going to torch the Saints, like you say, and they're going to say Michael Vick is back and Philadelphia's 4-4, and they're going to, quote, be turning it around, which they won't because they'll just have torched the Saints. Or the Saints are going to end the Andy Reid era in Philadelphia on national TV and just blow the Falcons out, and Michael Vick's going to be a basket case and fumble and do stupid shit like he always does. It's either going to go it's going one of two ways, Andrew. I don't think it's going to be a close game back and forth. It's either going to be Saints blowout and the Eagles Andy Reid era is done, or Michael Vick's going to be back.
I'll drink that Kool-Aid. But, you know, I think the thing here is we talked about at the beginning of the season, if the ship sinks, if things start to unravel, Do we have faith that Breeze won't let this team quit? Well, this Sunday, for the first time, I saw quit in the team. I saw quit in the coaching staff. I saw quit on the offensive line and the entire defensive unit. So, for the first time, I saw that, and I'm really interested to see how they rebound, because that, again, I say it again, that to me as a fan was the most disheartening and disappointing thing was a lack of effort and just to quit by the team. So, I'm really looking forward to seeing how they bounce back from this, and it's on national TV again. This time it's at home, and I know those guys have to feel embarrassed. And I'm hopeful it's the latter. You know, the Saints come out pissed off, and they're hungry for redemption, and a team that's kind of limping into the Superdome comes in, and they just blow the roof off the place. So I'm with you, and I'm hoping that's what's going to happen. But again, I'm a little fearful that Vic will make a ton of plays early, put the Saints down, and it's going to be the, oh, here we go again with the defense, because I think the tolerance level from the fan base right now is at an all-time low.
Of
and
the defense,
you know, if they start giving up explosive plays early to Vic, who has had a miserable season by any standard, the Boo Birds are going to come often, and they're going to come early. And if that's the case, things can unravel pretty quick, because you know, if you saw quit last week when the boos are raining down in the Superdome and they're not playing well, I think the quitting could come even faster. So based on that, I'm with you. I think it's going to go one of two ways. The Eagles will either come in, kind of not save their season, but give a newfound hope, beating up on the Saints, or the Saints will at least give the fans for one weekend redemption and kind of save face a little bit by rebounding from what last night was just a horrendous shit show.
If the Saints are ever going to be focused and just pissed off and lay an ass whooping on someone, this is the final chance. I don't think I'm going to pick them. I don't think I'm going to pick them, because I can't pick the Saints anymore with this defense. But I think Drew Brees, say whatever you want about him, he doesn't usually play awful 2 weeks in a row. So I think it's a good shot. But, Andrew, we got LSU-Alabama this week. Alabama's a 10.5-point favorite in Tiger Stadium. Look, and I know people are going to say, oh, the passing game's terrible, Alabama's unbeatable. I went to LSU. I saw LSU beat number one Florida in Tiger Stadium. That LSU team isn't nearly as talented as this LSU team, although that Florida team isn't nearly as good as this Alabama team. You watch LSU. Can it happen? And what does LSU have to do to pull the upset?
I don't think it can happen, because I think Alabama is too sound. They're too good everywhere. LSU is weak in certain areas, mostly in the passing game. And a little bit on the offensive line, they're banged up. LSU had been ravaged by injuries this year. So, that's been a tough break for them. But, I told you this last week or a couple weeks ago, there is no point spread that's large enough for me not to take Alabama in this game. And I really do believe Alabama is going to come in and absolutely embarrass LSU. And I wish it wasn't the case, because I'm still so salty and so bitter about how the national championship game went. And I would love nothing more than for LSU to have some redemption. But I just don't see it happening. I think Alabama is going to be up 21-3 at the end of the first quarter, and it'll be downhill from there. That's kind of how all their games have gone, honestly. And I just think LSU is walking into a buzzsaw. And I really think Alabama is practically, I mean, I think the only thing that's preventing them from being an NFL, a bottom feeder NFL quality team right now, is the quarterback. I think he's a good game manager, but he's a poor man in Alex Smith and McElroy. But if they had an elite quarterback to run that offense, they would win some games in the NFL.
If they had Andrew Luck, they'd be 2-14 in the NFL.
I think so.
But I'm going to say this, the LSU game, Andrew, Saturday night, Game kicks off at 7. Within two series of LSU having the ball, you'll know if they have a shot. Because either Mettenberger is going to keep being Mettenberger, or he's going to hit one of those plays that he always misses, where he misses an open guy or, you know, underthrows somebody. If he comes out, and I think Les Miles will open it up early and Alabama will give him a chance, if he hits one of those plays early, LSU will be in the game. But if he misses it or throws a pick, you'll be right, and it'll be 21-3, and it'll be downhill. You'll know by the time you finish your first beer whether LSU has any shot at all. And, you know, Andrew, games go like that sometimes. You can just tell. And I
think LSU has got to get that monkey off their back of not crossing the 50, which you'll remember well in the national title game. But I think on the first two drives, LSU needs to get a couple first downs on at least one of them, and preferably cross the 50 on one of those first two drives and kind of get that monkey off their back and tell themselves early in the game, okay, we can move the football on this team. If the first two drives are both three and out, there's a decent chance they're down 10-0. The offense has got to move the football early.
I think this game is a Les Miles special. I think early Les is going to be Les, and he's going to do something wacky. And it'll either blow up, or the crowd will go nuts, and they'll try to ride the energy. But, Andrew, it's all we got to look forward to, because the Saints, it is going to be a long, long 9 weeks, my friend.
Yeah, is the draft here yet?
Mock drafts. Oh, Lord. Over. Quick.
What pick are we right now, Ralph? Do you know what pick we are?
Right now they would be picked. The Chiefs would be one. They'd be pick about four.
So you, top five would be magical.
You know, look, if they get to November, if they get to December and they have less than three wins, I'll tell you flat out, I'm rooting for them to lose. Just play good, play competitive, lose the game, don't get anybody injured, because I don't want them going on a four-game winning streak.
Unless they're playing the Falcons.
And that, yes, of course. You know, they can go 4-12, just beat the Falcons twice, fine. So, but Andrew, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Hopefully we'll end the Andy Reid era.
Let's do it. Thanks, man.
All right.